ॐ अज्ञान्तिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। Seeking the blessings of all the senior devotees present at Radha Gopinath Mandir, especially we have a very senior Prabhupada disciple here, Mother Surabhi. She is sitting at the back there. Thank you for being present and encouraging us. Would you like to take a seat up here, Mother? Please. Thank you. She is a very senior disciple of Srila Prabhupada, joined as early as 1970, and for the last almost four decades now, she is serving Srila Prabhupada's mission. And also all the chief invitees to our monthly youth festival, Prerna, Inspiration, and all you wonderful friends. Welcome to this month's Prerna program. Thank you very much for coming. Today we have decided to discuss for exactly about 45 minutes on Krishna consciousness, the paradigm shift, and later we'll have a question answer session. I would also like to ask a few questions in between, and you should feel free to contribute. And of course, your questions are most welcome at the end. So to begin with, this word, paradigm, have any of you heard this word before? Just raise your hand. Okay, quite a few. Can we just... Maybe without the mic, but could you just tell what it is, what it means, all those who had their hands raised? No, without that, six or seven of them. Just raise your hand and speak out what you mean by the word paradigm. It's an inflection of the word, yeah, that is the literary meaning of the word paradigm. Anything else? Is that what all you meant? Anyone else having a different... Yes, sir? It's a boundary. Well, anything else? It's a model. Yes. So, almost 99% we can say if the audience doesn't know what the word paradigm means. In fact, in the business world, it has become like a hollow word. They call them buzzwords, which buzz for some time and then they lose their meaning altogether. Especially businessmen, politicians use a lot of paradigm sort of words, which generally doesn't mean anything. What are we going to discuss here then? We are trying to understand here what exactly is the shift in our thinking which occurs when we approach Krishna consciousness, especially as presented by Srila Prabhupada. What does it mean? So in the beginning half of the presentation, we will... maybe not half, one-third part of the presentation, we'll discuss some important things which, according to at least modern scholars or experts, have been big paradigm shifts, at least in those fields. And then we will try to see whether that model applies to your and my life. And if it applies, how and why? How can we use it to our own advantage? Right? So let's begin. We'll begin with the definition. What exactly do you mean by the word paradigm? It's a typical example, something which, as this gentleman said, it's a boundary. A paradigm is something which is defined. It is set in the mind. It could be a model that forms the basis of something. How do you know that something works? For example, those of you who are in management, there are some ways of selling something. Those of you who are studying science and chemistry, there are certain ways of discoveries, certain ways of inventions. It's an example that serves as a pattern or model for something. And finally, paradigm also means a mental image. A mental image. And I think this is the one which we shall try to zero in. This is the one which we should be using throughout our understanding of whether Krishna consciousness is a paradigm shift or it's the old paradigm. So this is one example. The military, as we all know or should know, is responsible for many of the discoveries and inventions which you and me use quite regularly. How many of you know that commercial aircraft, the ones we see flying people, they owe their origin, or commercial aviation owes its origin to the two world wars, or the stainless steel watch which you are using was discovered as a war effort. It was not that during a peacetime atmosphere someone tried to discover stainless steel. Because in a war, people become desperate. They want to try out so many things. Resources are allocated. And with the combined effort, and of course, war also means destruction. The atom bomb, for example, was born as a result of the allied nations. Just they didn't understand how to deal with the combined might of Hitler's Germany and Imperial Japan. And about 15,000 scientists working in different locations, and with their collaborative effort, the atom bomb was discovered or invented. But historians give an example that the trench meant a ditch which was dug between two countries in their on their borders. So World War I was fought with two armies firmly entrenched, as they say. And unless you come out, you won't get shot. So the Second World War, at least for some countries, they repeated the same success which they had in the previous war. But by the time the rules had changed, the tank had come, aerial bombardment. So the trench as a means of defense was completely useless. The paradigm had changed. The paradigm had shifted. So in the military sphere, and sometimes they say paradigms keep on changing very rapidly. Next. In the world of sports, if I may indulge you a little bit, I should confess, I am a little bit of a sports fan, especially in India. If you don't like cricket, you are seen as some kind of anomaly. I mean, what's wrong with you? You don't like cricket? If everybody is saying that, you know, hurrah, really, you know, we did it, very nice, and somebody asks, who's playing? And, you know, even if he doesn't know something very crucial, like the business statistics or some price of some product which he's selling, that sin is forgivable. But if India is playing some other country, and if you are asking who's playing whom, then you are really an idiot. So, someone just told me this, that when 5-day cricket was becoming boring, And frankly, cricket is boring for many people. In fact, right now, just a month ago, I was in Mayapur and some boys were playing cricket. And one American devotee came and we were both watching the game for about 3-4 minutes. And he said, "I can't make any sense out of it." I said, "Why? You see, this person is a bowler. He comes and throws the ball. This person is a striker and he strikes it." He said, "That I can understand. But this game doesn't make any sense to me. Just see what we see as a very engrossing and very adventurous game for, I mean, how many countries play cricket? 9, 10? Isn't it? And how many countries are there in the world? 150. So only 1/15th of the population, what does it make? 10 out of 150. Less than 10%, right? Play cricket. 90% of the world doesn't know what to make of this game. Still in India, it's like a religion. They say this is our religion and someone says their God. Of course, he'll be replaced soon by someone else. Anyway, so somebody had this idea that let's have only a one-day match. Instead of 5 days, limited overs and one day. And the way in which you play the 5 day match is not the way you play the 1 day. So, the last 10 overs were called, anyone knows the name? The slog overs. So that was the time when everybody was very alert. You really know that now, if a team has many wickets to spare, they are just going to go all out, hammering in all directions. And it made sense. You conserve your energy and at the end let it go full steam. When one adventurous nation decided to change the paradigm, they decided everybody is trying to improve their skills with this model. Conserve and then full steam. What they decided was, we shall go in the very first over as though it is a slog over. Anyone knows the name of the nation? Yes. So they had some success. They had some success. Of course, a game is a game. But the fact is that the paradigm, those who change the paradigms, they get the advantage of it. The paradigm pioneers, as they are called in business language. So, in many games, like India was the undisputed champion of hockey. It was on grass hockey. So, some intelligent person somewhere decided to popularize the game. We should introduce AstroTurf, which is synthetic rubber. And on synthetic rubber, the Indian Hockey Federation, which I think still trains people on grass, and still doesn't understand why we can't win any medal outside, they kept on training in the old model and they kept on losing. So this is what happens when the paradigms change. Next. Business paradigms. Of course, today is the world of business, and in the words of one American president, America's business is business. That's the only thing they know. How to earn money, a lot of money. And if not all of you, I mean if not most of you, all of you certainly at one point of time will be questioned by someone that you are taking to Krishna consciousness or you are showing interest in Krishna consciousness. What about money? Some of you might have already asked that. This process of earning money, process of doing business has acquired such a sort of a big place in our life that we feel unless I earn money, I'm not successful in life. But the business world also undergoes its paradigms. We'll see one example. As I said, the mental image, this was contributed by His Holiness Jayadwait Maharaj when he had come here on a visit. I'll show you a slide. It makes perfect sense. And a slight change due to certain other factors, and the business may go down miserably. Let us see what it is. This I don't need to explain. It's a fairly known brand. Now watch what happens when there is a slight change. How many of you would like to order 20 bottles of soft drink on the right side? Believe me, I'm not making this up. There was a soft drink called AIDS. AIDS, it just helps you in regaining your strength. And later, I'm talking of 1960s. And later in the 70s and maybe in the 80s, a strange disease started killing people. And it had no name. The only symptoms the doctors could understand was the immune system depleted itself so rapidly, got destroyed so fast. And they said this is an acquired thing. So they called it acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. It's fine. But they said, hey, why not call it AIDS? So AIDS, AIDS, became known as some kind of syndrome. And later, now we know it's a killer disease, it's an epidemic. And there was one poor manufacturer of some soft drink who was not able to compete with the other giants, but he was having a small business. And this one disease name completely killed his business. Normally, when you have a business and you want to get rid of it, you can sell it to someone. People do that all the time. Some computer manufacturer thinks that, I don't like to manufacture laptops anymore. I'd like to give it to someone else. They give it to someone else. And he says, now these popular brand of laptops are manufactured by me. And I assure you, the same quality. Because the brand name has some goodwill. Heard the term goodwill? But with this kind of paradigm change, there is no goodwill. All is lost. What was here is not here anymore. It's gone. Next. So now we will try to understand how these things called paradigms, they apply in spiritual life. Or do they really apply? And if they, how do we, as I said, how do we use them to our advantage? So just let me recapitulate. A paradigm is a mental image. It's a model. It's an example. There's a framework within which you perform your duties. And this is what is the beginning of this great spiritual classic, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad means of God, Bhagavan. Bhagavat means in possessive. Gita, it's a song. It's a dialogue between Arjun, a very, very famous warrior, and his intimate friend, Lord Krishna. Now, of course, Krishna, whether is he God or is he a diplomat or is a very, in Bombaya Hindi, chalu person, what exactly is he? I would like to capture some audience responses on, like many of you are sympathetic people here, of course we might also have some newcomers. What are the specific allegations, or what are the specific doubts people have about Lord Krishna? Can I just have some responses? Would you like to capture them?
Yeah.
I'll contribute the first one. They say he's an immoral person. What else? Yes. He doesn't keep his promises. A few more. He is in hell. No, don't worry. Yes. He has 16,000 wives. So that's like a problem. For whom? For, I'm saying what Krishna does, what is the problem for you specifically? You're not saying that is a problem for him, right? Anything else? He's a politician. You mean he shouldn't be a politician? These are the things which we are capturing here are things which he shouldn't be doing. If he wants to speak Bhagavad Gita and claim that he is God, divinity and what not, he shouldn't be doing all these things. That's what I want here. So someone is saying he's an immoral person, he has 16,000 wives, he's a politician. Okay, a few more. It's very difficult to understand him. Okay? Yes. He was more attached to his relatives and friends. No, fine, don't laugh. I'm asking you what you have personally felt in your life and somebody has argued with you that, you know, why Krishna? Krishna is blah, 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 blah. That's what I want here. And we'll see whether it fits him or not. He does many contradictory activities. Okay, I think we have 3 plus 3, 6 through 8. Good enough for a small class. You may have some, just one last. He's a thief. Okay. Are you sure? My God, we are sitting in Lord Krishna's house and having a list of so many things against him. But since he is very merciful, he is watching over us. How do we deal with this, all with these allegations? Okay, fine. So, Arjun as a warrior was certainly wronged. So much of injustice done on him and his brothers. Anyone reading, even having a cursory reading of Mahabharata, will know that what injustice is. So the Pandav brothers, they said, well, what we want is to rule. We are Kshatriyas and that's what should be allowed. So Krishna as a friend was made their mediator. He went to the Pandava, he went on behalf of the Pandava brothers and told the Kaurava brothers, I am saying this assuming that most of us here know what the story plot is. Duryodhan, the chief of the Kauravas, he said, no, I am not going to give any land. He says, what to speak of the kingdom? Why can't they fight? Why don't they admit that they don't have the courage, the chivalry to come and fight? He said, what to speak of compromise with them? So Krishna was saying, but why do you have to be so belligerent? Why do you have to be so argumentative? I will persuade them to accept one village each, that's all. Just one village per brother. Imagine ruling the entire kingdom of the whole planet to just having one village as your domain. I assure you, Krishna is saying, they will be happy with that. And Duryodhana's reply was, I will not give land that can be accommodated on the head of a pin. What to speak of a village? Instead, he tried to arrest Krishna. Now, mediators, messengers, are supposed to be neutral. They are supposed to be treated with respect. So Krishna, he said, what nonsense, you want to arrest me? And he showed him a magical universal form. And this terrified Duryodhan to some extent, not that it purified his heart. And he said, this fellow is a magician, he shows some tricks. And he said, anyway, let us prepare for war. Internally, he was so angry. He was also so much afraid. He was knowing that the Pandavas are ruled by dharma. If people who are ruled by me come to know that the Pandavas are now kings in their own right, all my people will go and stay with them. Even though it's a small village. That was his main fear. Do we have these kind of diplomats or politicians now? The number one fear for politicians is their own people. Somebody might kill them. It's true. Nowadays, politicians don't get this fear of being killed by somebody from the opposite party or some foreign national. Their own people. The Prime Minister has to move around heavily blockaded and so much of security. So obviously not everyone loves them. But this was not the case. So we are talking about such highly, not only educated, but highly cultured people. And this Arjun, when he came on the battlefield, the Bhagavad Gita just describes that all of a sudden, he just had a desire that Krishna, before we begin the actual fighting, I just would like to see who has come here and how they appear. So Krishna seems puzzled that you have come all the way, you prepared for 12 long years for this fighting. All the people who had troubled you are there. There is no need of supposing, or there is no need to make any guesswork as to who has come. They are all your brothers, relatives, from your father's side, from your maternal uncle's side. But still Arjuna said, no, I just would like to see. So at that time, the two opposing forces would meet on a great plain, battlefield. They would stop at a particular time. The rules for the Mahabharata were, early morning with a conch shell blown, the fighting would begin. At dusk, evening time, with a conch shell, the fighting would stop. Then they would even go and meet each other. Go to each other's camps. It's not like kill somebody at night. That became at the very end. So Arjun has now decided to just go and see who has come. And seeing his own grandfather right in front of him, seeing his guru, his martial arts teacher, Dronacharya, suddenly Arjuna feels remorse, disappointment, dejection. Actually, he becomes the depressed case. And there are like five reasons given why Arjuna decided not to fight. I'll just repeat, the example of a paradigm is an image of what you want to do in life. It's a framework within which you operate, apart from the literary meaning. So the first of his reasons for not fighting was compassion. He said, Krishna, I feel compassion for these people. Why should these people die just for my sake? They may not be cultured. They don't know the higher values in life. I do know. So, I really feel very bad for them. Therefore, I will not fight. The second reason Arjun gave is not a very noble one. Normally, when you enjoy, you enjoy with your loved ones, you enjoy with your relatives. But for Arjun, the problem was, if he kills them, then there are no relatives left with whom to enjoy. You see in your own life, what were the moments when you really felt happy? When you were with your friends, very intimate friends? Do you feel that you could be in one room all alone and enjoy all the time? No. But for Arjun, the problem is, if he wants a kingdom, just before the kingdom are those relatives. If he kills the relatives, then he only gets the kingdom. So therefore his question is, I don't feel like killing them because I won't be able to enjoy the kingdom. His third reason is destruction of family traditions. At that time, we are talking of 5,000 years before. People here say that 30 years ago life was so nice. Or some really old person may say that in my childhood, rice was only 50 paisa kilo. So, things were cheap, whatever. Now imagine, 5,000 years ago, certainly life was little bit Vedic. Certainly more Vedic than what we see now. So Arjuna's main worry is all the able-bodied men, if they are killed, then what remains is just women who may not be protected properly. Unprotected women could be exploited. There's a good chance that unscrupulous people, degraded people could exploit them. And that combination of degraded people and exploited women could give rise to a new generation which has no respect for the traditions, for the heritage, for the culture. And he says, I don't want to be responsible for that. The fourth reason which Arjuna gave is a personal one. He says, Krishna, you want me to kill them, but killing your own relatives is sinful. Especially killing your own grandfather, whom you love so much. Especially killing your own guru. And the fifth reason which Arjuna gave is indecision. Krishna, I don't know what I should be doing, what I shouldn't be doing. So, many people, especially those who gave these kind of allegations about Krishna, is immoral, is a diplomat, is a politician, what right he has to do this, what right he has to do that. Especially in those schools of thought, there is so much respect for Arjuna. There is so much, people are in so much agreement with what Arjuna was feeling. And it makes sense, isn't it? A very nice person is not willing to fight. And here is one person saying, I am God, fight, otherwise I will do this to you. What kind of God is he? In fact, many times devotees say that, when we say that for world peace, Bhagavad Gita, look at this. This book talks of a war. This book details about somebody who was not willing to fight. And here is God telling him, fight, fight, fight. And you are telling me to buy the book and have mental peace? Come on. So, it seems that Arjuna made perfect sense. What Arjuna said makes good sense to all of us who are ignorant of the truths of Bhagavad Gita. And at least one person was very miserable because of this kind of logic. That was Arjuna himself. Because after saying all of these, after giving all these different reasons that he won't fight, it's not logical, it's not permitted by Shastras, this problem would occur, that problem would come, Krishna seems to say that, well, then what do you want to do? He says, I don't know whether I should kill them, that is good for me, or being killed by them, that is good for me. So Krishna seems to say that, you are a warrior, just go and kill them. Just go and fight, win the kingdom, that will make you happy. And that time Arjun says, no. Krishna, I am not talking of this simple earthly kingdom. Even if I am being given an unrivaled kingdom of the demigods, not of this planet, but even heavenly kingdom I am given. This kingdom has so many rivals, but if that kingdom without any rivals, still my basic question is, where can I get transcendental knowledge? That's what I want. Arjuna is not realizing that his mental paradigm is not helping him. And he's not willing to come out of that. Check this in your own life. Whether I am able to walk out of the box, as they say. People are very much fond of talking about in the box thinking and out of the box thinking. So Arjuna's allegations, Arjuna's problems are typically in the box. And in the box, Arjuna says, directly or indirectly, his very first statement when he tells Krishna that just take this chariot in the midst of the two opposing forces. Let me see who has come here to fight. So this idea, let me see, let me check what's happening with my life. Let me take the decision. Let me be the center of my life. Whenever you have people who assess their life with this paradigm, that I am like the sun and my job, my family, my friends, my hobbies, my bank balance are like the planets which revolve around the sun. That's what happens, right? The sun is in the center, heliocentric theory, and everything moves. Then you are in a big mess. And then, at the end of the first chapter, Arjuna is telling Krishna, Vepathuscha sharire me roma harshascha jayate gandivam samsate hasta tvakchaiva paridhayate. He says, my limbs are trembling. My gandiva bow is slipping from my hands. My hairs are standing on my end. Not due to exhilaration, due to depression. And Arjuna was practically crying. So Krishna would say, but then what am I supposed to do? I tell you something and you defeat that with a very solid argument. I know you are a learned fellow. You are a very cultured person. You are the world's most experienced archer. And Arjuna is saying, but what about my problem? Who's going to help me? And he's crying. Ashru purna kulekshanam. At that time, instead of participating in Arjuna's paradigm, the Gita describes, prahasannam iva bharata. Krishna is just smiling. And people feel, what kind of God is he? You know, I am having problems. I come to him and he is smiling. See, Krishna is not crying in this picture here. Is he? Most of the time, patients feel that the doctor should also suffer like them. Then you'll understand what I am undergoing. So, what Krishna does, next. This is what he does in a very simple language. You know, like those big cardboard boxes which come in containers. And they have this thing done there, right side up. So Krishna sort of found, at that time, he's not talking of today, 21st century, there was no 21st century at that time. There was a different way of calculation. 5,000 years ago, Lord Krishna said, this whole social system is nonsense. We may say it's now it is nonsense, or somebody say 50 years ago it was a little bit better. And you say, what is the proof of that? Krishna very, very clearly says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sa evayam maya tedya yoga prokta puratana. I am going to tell the same thing to you today. You are my devotee and my friend. Bhaktosime sakha cheti rahasya metad uttamam. I am going to tell you a very sublime secret. It's knowledge. What happened to that knowledge? Sakale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. Mahata kal. Mahata kal means either it can be prolonged time or it can be the powerful force of time. Any meaning is applicable. Due to such a powerful force of time, the Vedic system, the yoga system as it is, appears to be lost. And mind you, at that time, there were Brahmanas behaving like, little bit like Brahmanas, Kshatriyas behaving like Kshatriyas, more or less, Vaishyas, Shudras, other professions. Today, it's even difficult to tell these things because people feel, oh, you want the caste system again? The caste system, people feel like the plaster caste system. You know, when somebody's bone breaks, some Western people were saying that, why India cannot gallop, India cannot run? Because on their legs, they have this caste system. Their own system is preventing their progress. And then we have social reformers who say that, you know, hell with this caste problems, distinctions, let anybody go anywhere. Fine. But the Bhagavad Gita, so many thousands of years ago, doesn't say that caste has to be by birth. Even in Bombay, sometimes we talk to taxi cabbies, taxi walas, and when they feel that we have preached them too much, they show their Brahmin thread. Am Brahmane. What are you doing here in Bombay, applying a taxi? At least at that period, people like Jarasandh, who were demons, but they had Brahmanas performing yajna every day. Even Jarasandh would never refuse somebody's request for a donation. And what does Krishna say after looking at all that? This paradigm is bogus. Why? Because it is not solving even Arjuna's problem. So what Krishna is proposing, and this is where the shift comes in picture. It is difficult. Sometimes it is almost impossible. Krishna himself admits in the Bhagavad Gita, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of thousands among men, hardly one strives for perfection. Out of thousands who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. And therefore, Krishna, step by step, throughout the Bhagavad Gita, answers all of Arjuna's queries. But what is the first step for the paradigm shift to occur? Arjun, representing all of us as an archetypical living entity, he says, Krishna, now I am a soul surrendered unto you. Krishna may say, hey, now what happened to you? You are my friend. We joked, we sing, dance, we go on hunting expeditions together. Right from childhood, we are thick friends. Arjuna is saying, no. I am not happy with that friendship anymore, at least on the battlefield. I am a soul surrendered unto you. I want to become your disciple. Shishya steham. He is not joking. It's a question of life and death. Arjuna had taken a vow. If someone tells me, keep aside your Gandiva bow, I would have killed that person. And now he himself had kept it aside. It was as if just less than death for him. And therefore, Arjuna's most intelligent first step, the beginning step, was to accept Krishna as a spiritual master. I spoke of thousands among men hardly strive to understand Krishna. Out of thousands who actually take this effort, only one may know him in truth. We are especially blessed with this one personality, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who most mercifully started this ISKCON society. By his one example, by his one purity, by the efforts he took, thousands and thousands can actually understand Krishna in truth. So the devotee of Krishna sometimes is said to be more merciful than Krishna. Krishna says, hardly anyone knows me in truth. But by that mercy of a devotee, thousands and thousands and millions can understand his message. So therefore, Arjun showed by his own example that in order to come out of any problem in life, you have to accept Lord Krishna as your teacher. Let's visit those allegations. They are not exactly part of our program today, so I won't be dealing with all of them in detail. But what do you do when you have these kind of things? Normally, check your own mental paradigm. How do you buy a product? How do you decide a film is good or bad? How do you decide a magazine is good or bad? How do you decide a college is good or bad? You check out with authorities. You check out the product. You check out what kind of jobs are available to those who pass out of this college, isn't it? Just simple logic. Similarly, if at all you want to understand as to why this person Krishna is to be respected as God, Shishi Radha Gopinath ki, why should he be given that respect as God and you don't have any means to verify God, just go and seek out the opinions of authorities. Just like the Indian economy, whether it is doing good or bad, they don't ask you and me, they ask some economist. Similarly, whether Krishna is good or Krishna is bad, whether Krishna is moral or immoral, whether he is a diplomat or a politician or a thief, whether he is allowed to do these things, you can't ask Krishna because you don't have a connection. Ask the authorities in spiritual life. Ask Bhishma Dev. He says, Krishna is the Lord of my life. Ask Arjun. Ask Lord Shiva. Ask Narad Muni. Ask the Pandavas. Ask Maharaj Parikshit. Ask Maharaj Ambarish. So just take it. This is simple understanding. Now these are the people whose lives, whose character is like an inspiration for millions and multitudes of millions. Read the life story of Swami Prabhupada. How he started this mission, what inspired him, and why is he a devotee of Krishna? At least that will give us an understanding. Hey, if this person is worshipable, and if he says that Krishna is his worshipable Lord, obviously there must be something. So as I told you, we won't go into the individual details, but I just wanted to ask you what exactly people say about the allegations against Krishna. And this is one sure short way. Ask the authorities what they say. So, understanding Krishna's way of thinking based upon the authorities of other authorities, the Bhagavad Gita deals straight away with Arjuna's problems. Regarding compassion, Krishna explains throughout the Bhagavad Gita that Arjun, your compassion for saving somebody's life is like compassion, is a compassion on the bodily platform. A woman is shouting, oh, please save my husband, save my husband, save my husband. And people see one man struggling, the river bed is like, water is deep, very strong flowing. And suddenly one person jumps in, and they could see in the distance, he's trying to catch the person. And after some time, he comes on the shore. And he says, ma'am, I'm sorry, I couldn't save your husband completely, but at least I got his coat back. You think she will reward him, pro rata, percentage wise? Oh, at least he got something. No, the man is lost. What is the value of compassion for the body which is gone and the outer covering which is retrieved? So Krishna is saying that, Arjun, this compassion for the bodily, on the bodily platform, doesn't go a long way. Compassion is a spiritual emotion. It has to arise from the platform of the soul. Regarding enjoyment, the Gita explains, real enjoyment is also on the spiritual platform. You may say, so what? I actually feel that material life is not all that bad. I mean, there are some problems here and there. There are three parameters of real enjoyment. Now, there could be some products with the name real, but this is really real, real. First of all, spiritual enjoyment is pure. There is no milavat, there is no adultery. Nothing is mixed with it. Secondly, it is limitless, unending. It's not that today you get it and tomorrow you find, well, it's over now. Its shelf life is gone. Thirdly, it expands. One thing which gives you happiness this much, which is pure, unending, tomorrow you do it, you find that its capacity to give enjoyment is increased. How does this compare with any material thing? If someone wants to eat a laddu, and you give him one, and he says, wow, delicious. Since he's a student of economics, any students of economics here? Raise your hands. Those who little bit know economics. Okay, few, at least you'll understand this. And if that person is asked, how much do you think in numerical terms could you give to this satisfaction which came from this laddu out of 10? So well, 9. Really satisfied, very nicely made. Have one more? So he says, well, why not? How do you find it? Well, nice. How much satisfaction? He said, 8. So why not 9? Well, I was a bit satisfied. It took some more time for me to digest it and now I'm full. What about one more? He said, oh no. 2 is my limit. No, take one more. He takes one more and it's like a big task. How much utility? Satisfaction. It's 4. There was some problem. The suji, the rava was not cooked properly maybe. Now the thing comes. He says, one more. He says, no. He says, you have to eat it. So when that fourth one goes in, it's almost like, how much? One. I spoiled my stomach. I have to do my studies now. I can't take it anymore. You bring him one more and whoa, the whole thing comes out. Negative utility. What happened? It started with something which gives him such enjoyment. 9 out of 10. It was not pure. It was mixed. It had an end. And what does it become expanding? It started contracting right from the third thing itself. So this is the big mistake. So what we call as material happiness is not exactly happiness. Then what it is? Vedic authorities say it is simply a gap between two miseries. That's all. How are you? Fine, no problem. That means I'm fine because right now there are no problems. But I know there is one right now coming. So between that, between those problems, that gap, I call it happiness. Thirdly, destruction of family. Arjuna says, I will go to hell if I fight this war. Krishna says, you'll go to hell if you don't fight this war. You see the opposites in way of thinking. Krishna says, if I don't take charge and run the world's affairs, whenever there's a discrepancy, the entire cosmos will run into, will go to hell. Fourthly, there is sinful reactions. Arjuna says, I may suffer. Krishna actually proves to him that sin will occur if you do not do your duty. The Gita is often compared with the operation theater. The social body is the patient. Krishna is the surgeon and Arjun is the scalpel, is the weapon used, is the operation theater instrument. And Krishna says, you be the instrument. You take the credit. I don't need the credit. But you do it as my instrument. So far from giving Arjuna sinful reactions for doing that, just like somebody has an ulcer in his stomach, he goes to the doctor and says, please cut my body. I'll pay you for it. Normally, if somebody cuts your body, you don't pay him, right? Do you pay the criminals and thieves for cutting your body? No. But to surgeons, you do pay. So do not confuse the battlefield of Kurukshetra like a mundane cat and dog fight which occurs in our times. It was a dharma yuddha. Fifthly, indecision. This is the most sort of appealing point in people's lives today. We are always plagued by indecision. Should I do this or should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? And why? Because both are equally unattractive. Or all three are equally unattractive. And that's where the Bhagavad Gita's paradigm comes in the force. Prabhupada explains in the first chapter purports that Arjuna is seeing this battlefield only from his own limited point of view. I may enjoy, I may not enjoy. And today people say, what's so wrong? It's your life. You plan it. Go ahead. Do it. But who am I? Am I the center of this universe? Or am I a part, a component of this universe? Cats and dogs won't understand. Human beings do. So, the paradigm of Krishna consciousness, the shift which takes place, is actually between these two points. Should I be the center of this universe? Then whatever I say, everybody should obey. We all like to. All our electronic gadgets make you feel, here, you be in control. But what they want is, you buy this and be in my control. Nobody wants to give up control. Although there is illusion. Srila Prabhupada once was giving a class and he said, modern man should understand that the human being is a part and parcel of God. He is not Godhead himself. Like your eye. The eye is a part of the body. When we eat food, eye needs nourishment, isn't it? It has a right. It serves us in so many ways. We open the eyes, we see so many things. What if you start pouring food in your eyes? Take some hot pakoda and put it in your eyes. You don't get any enjoyment. That's not the right way to enjoy either. In fact, the eye suffers, obviously. And the body also suffers. Isn't it? So, the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita deals with the paradigm of what happens when an individual feels that he is the center of the universe. Then whatever he does is injurious to himself, is injurious to society. When he understands the Krishna conscious paradigm acts as a servant of Krishna, that means the food particle, the pakoda, instead of going to the eye, goes through the mouth to the stomach churns it, digests it, diffuses all the available nourishment, the eye automatically gets it. Do you find the eye quarreling with your stomach that, hey, last time you ate something, I have not eaten anything? There's a perfect arrangement. Or like a tree, the root is nourished, all the parts of the tree get nourishment. So, in a nutshell, the Krishna conscious paradigm is to put Krishna in the center of our life, especially by understanding Lord Krishna's personality through the merciful books given by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to associate with other like-minded fellow pilgrims, other people who also have made the decision in their life to put Krishna in the center. It may not be an easy process, in the beginning at least, and especially for youth, when the whole world is saying, come on, enjoy, do this, do this, do this. At that time, to say, no, I want to put Krishna in the center of my life. And someone says, what? Are you mad or something? So these are the dangers, these are the challenges which we face. But just like, with an open eye, find out all those people who you think are happy, by keeping themselves in the center, how much is their happiness? Is it pure? Is it unending? And is it over-expanding? Just use these three things, three parameters. And you will find that those who put Krishna in the center of their life are very happy, very secure. Their happiness may not come immediately. Their security may not come immediately. But at least they know that they are on the right path. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna, Guruji.
Yes.
Hare Bol. On what basis Arjuna has chosen Krishna as a spiritual master? Because choosing spiritual master, we should know that the check has to be done exactly. And how he was knowing that he is the Supreme Personality of God, Krishna?
The question is, on what basis has Arjuna chosen Krishna as a spiritual master? This question also is addressed in the Bhagavad Gita itself. Arjuna says that it's not just me who is saying this because you are my friend. Param dham pavitram paramam bhavan asito devalo vyaso svayam chaiva bravishime. Arjun is not just a warrior, he is also a very learned person. And he says that, the point which I just repeated, asita is a great sage, devala is a great sage, Vyasa is a great sage. Narad Muni is a great sage. They also repeat the same thing. And now I am just hearing it from you directly. So the way to get knowledge is never to use your own experience, but to always choose the experience of great authorities. So Arjuna himself has seen what Krishna is, and he has based up his perception upon the experience of great authorities. And that's why he has chosen him. Next question. Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. As you were telling about indecision, I'm suffering from that. So actually I've got two options to pursue my careers. So when you said we should keep Krishna as the center, then the third option opens for me, joining as a brahmachari. Yeah, this is one of the options. So now three options are there. So as you said, if you put Krishna at the center, one of the options would get reduced. So that doesn't happen.
Since you decided to join, you can talk to me later. What I meant was that your decision to join a brahmachari ashram is always welcome, because the Vedic way of life is arranged in such a way that at least for the first 25% of your life, you are a student. If you want, you can pursue family life, or if you want, you can continue and straight away dedicate your life fully. The point I made was, if the two choices which were equally appealing to you or equally unattractive, if they were based upon thinking myself as the center, if I am the enjoyer, then they give rise to further complications. But when the choice is that Krishna, I am your surrendered soul, you choose what is best for me, then you will find that there is only one thing which is made out for you, and then there is no problem of indecision. It's a process which you have to subject yourself to. Just like if somebody is not taking medicine and he finds that he has so many complications in his body, finally he says, okay, I am ready for a surgery. That doesn't mean he's okay immediately. Then comes the surgery day, then comes the actual surgery, then comes recuperation. So similarly, spiritual life should be taken as medicine under the guidance of a physician. So you do that, then you'll get the full benefits. Next.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, during your lectures period, you have told about the family enjoyment. So, according to my view, Lord Ram has given more importance to the family than Krishna. So why are you giving more importance to Krishna than Ram? This is my question.
Your question is that Lord Ram has given more importance to family enjoyment.
Family, yes, family's values.
Where do you read that?
Sir, according to your father, he had left his kingdom and go to the forest. Just also obey his orders. Kakai had told us please, I repeat my questions.
Okay.
We are giving more importance to Krishna than Ram. Ram has given more importance, value, family importance, family values than Krishna. So why, sir, why are you giving more importance to Krishna? That's why my question. Ram has given more importance, family values, has given more family values importance.
First of all, it's a bit confusing that you are saying that Ram has given more importance to family values and Krishna has not given. I don't think anywhere in the Ramayana or Mahabharata that is the main understanding. So, I won't touch that. As per your question, that why are we giving more importance to Krishna and less importance to Ram, then you have to find out who these two personalities are. The Vedas say they are actually one. It's not that Ram and Krishna are two different personalities. They are two different gods. There is only one God. And he takes different avatars. In one avatar, he presents one aspect of his either Aishwarya, opulence, or Madhurya, his sweetness. If a person is in his office dressed in a military uniform because he is a commander, and then he goes to play golf, and then he has different clothes. So you say that that person was different, you are different. He says, I am the same person. No, but in the morning your uniform was different. Well, that was for the office. Now I am playing here. Then he goes to the swimming pool, then he has another uniform. Then he goes for a party, he has another uniform. Then he goes to bed, he has another set of clothes. You mean to say that all are different people? One man was shouting orders, one man was singing, one man was eating. No. There is only one person. So, Krishna, Ram, Narasimha, all these are one God. But he comes in different avatars or different incarnations. He gives different kinds of upadesh. But ultimately, the upadesh is to surrender unto him. So, please do not have this misconception that Ram was caring for the family and Krishna is saying, hell with the family, or family doesn't matter. No, it's not like that. Next question.
My question is that, why...
Please raise your hand. Yeah.
When Krishna goes to Duryodhana and ask him giving the village and they will be satisfied. But as a Krishna's God, he can force Duryodhana to do that. But he's not do that. force Krishna, Duryodhan to say no and have the war. Is the Krishna chooses that platform where the Bhagavad Gita gets out? If that war doesn't happen, where the Krishna will go get the Bhagavad Gita? And why Krishna chooses Arjun? Why not Duryodhan? This is my question.
Good question. What was the first question? I didn't understand the first line. That if
Krishna
wanted, forced, why Krishna didn't force Duryodhan?
No, if Krishna wants, Duryodhan will agree. Because
okay, yeah.
He's a god.
Yeah.
He wants that Duryodhan say, yes, okay, I'm ready to give him the village. Then there is no war.
Yes.
But there is a war. Because Krishna don't want that Duryodhan says, okay, I will.
Okay, let us, this is a big topic which you have raised. Why God forces or why God doesn't force? You and me are technically free citizens of India, isn't it? Where do you stay? Vashi. Did you take government's permission to come to this program? Did you go to the police station and say that, please sir, please, I'm going to the program, it's a Saturday evening, a nice program, and I'm please requesting you give me permission. Tell me, when would a situation come when you have to take police permission to go from New Bombay to Bombay? I'll tell you when it would be. If you are a criminal, I'm not accusing you, but if you become a criminal and there's a case against you, then only you will have to take permission to go from one place to another. But because you are a gentleman, because you are following laws, therefore you are free. Many people commit the mistake of thinking that if I follow laws, I am bound by them. When I break laws, I'll be free. But that's not true. In just a simple, ordinary, daily matter. So, does God really force or can God really force? If you have to understand, can God force? Yes, He can. He has absolute power. But does He force? No, never. Why? These are some deep Vedantic matters. Krishna as God is fully independent. Fully independent. There are so many nice words describing Him. Swachhand Atma, Swarat. Fully independent. Now, if the ocean water is, you say, salty, fully salty, you drink it, it's like salty, salty, salty. You take one teaspoon, could it be sweet, sour, pungent, bitter? It has to be salty. Why? Because it is part of it. So therefore, the living entity being part of Krishna also has that limited independence. It's limited. Krishna is independent, His independence is unlimited. We are independent, our independence is limited. Just like an animal bound to a tree with a rope, like a calf, which is, let's say the rope is about 10 feet in length and it's tied to the tree. Is the calf free? No, it is tied. But can it move? It can. It can jump, it can go here and there. But when it goes beyond the 10 feet length, it's caught. It has to come back. Similarly, the living entity in whatever body, human, aquatic, tree or animal, any form, that limited independence is never taken away. So similarly, God doesn't want to force anyone. What fun is there in force? If I tell you that if you don't become a devotee, there are 10 people here who will beat you up. You say, okay, I'll become a devotee, no problem. But there's no fun in that. You should come of your own volition, own willingness. So Duryodhan and the Pandavas, they represent different attitudes. The Pandavas are those that whatever may happen in this material life, we will never accuse God. We will always take it as something which we have to sort it out. And we will never leave the path of Dharma. And people like Duryodhan is
Whatever happens which is good is my doing. Whatever happens if it is bad is he or they, whoever. So that's what we should learn from Mahabharata. So your second question as to why Krishna chose Duryodhan, why did Krishna chose Arjuna and not Duryodhan? Because to be chosen as an instrument of God is also an honor. Just like the chauffeur of the president is no ordinary chauffeur. You may say, tum gaadi chalata hai? President ka gaadi chalata hai. I am no ordinary chauffeur, I am no ordinary driver. He said, would you drive my car? I don't drive such cheap cars. True. Because he is a presidential chauffeur, he also has his dignity. Similarly, to be chosen by God as an instrument of giving this knowledge is no ordinary honor. It's a very special honor. Next question. Yes, sir. Is that your question? Okay. This is a fairly repeated question. It is based on the previous paradigm that this war is bad. War means people die and that is bad. But this is what we discussed in this lecture, that at least for that particular period, that particular situation, this war was a dharma yuddha. Anyone cutting your limb is a very bad situation, because that means pain. But in the operation theater, the person whose limb is being cut is paying the surgeon for it. So that violence is not bad, because the consciousness of the surgeon is to save the life of the patient. So Krishna, knowing fully well by his own intelligence, and his intelligence is God's intelligence, he has brought all those people who are capable of so much mischief in this world, brought them at one particular place, and just like a farmer, you know, bringing together so many different kinds of grasses, and takes his knife and that's what Krishna did. Instead of going to everybody's home and cutting them down, he just brought all of them together in the pretext of a war. So war is bad, violence is bad, quarreling is bad when it is on the cats and dog platform. Like somebody asked Prabhupada, when the world war was fought, you know, on whose side was God? Prabhupada said, when they started, they didn't ask God. They didn't take God's permission. When they found it is beyond their control now, oh God, please save me. No, that was not like that. So, we are not interested in battlefield of Kurukshetra because so many different kinds of weapons were used. We are interested because Krishna was there. So, please do not view the battlefield of Kurukshetra with the same myopic lenses with which we understand other wars. That will be a big mistake. Shift the paradigm. Next question. Yes. We have time till 8:50. Okay.
Sir, after the Gita and before the war, sir, the thing in Arjuna's mind is that he want to occupy the kingdom. So then why this war is known as a dharma yuddha? Which dharma you are talking about? And which dharma he want to establish and which is not present in Arjuna, Duryodhan's presence?
Very good question. Thank you very much, sir. The question is, what kind of dharma was established by this? Was there a first part that you said after the Gita was spoken and after the Gita and before the war? Yes. Okay. So, what exactly is the word dharma? What does it stand for? Dharma, the technical root, Sanskrit root is dhru, dhri dhatu. It means dharan, uphold something, become something's constitution, So, in Hindi or other languages, we say guna dharma. What is the guna dharma of salt? To be salty. What is the guna dharma of sugar? To be sweet. Of chili? To be pungent in taste. The dharma of water in its normal state is to be liquid. Dharma taken at this very, very pure level means the real position of a particular object. So this dharma has the capacity to satisfy you, to keep you happy, peaceful, engaged. And this dharma was lost. Now, what is the solution? How do you reinstate dharma? Dharma, if it is taken as like the digestive process, then the stomach has to be there. No other organ of your body can help you digest food. That has to go to the stomach. No other organ or limb of a tree can take the water and provide it to all the parts. The root has to be there. So who is the person to whom service can be rendered and everybody can be satisfied? Is it you yourself? Me? Parents? Your parents or my parents? Whose parents? Society? Country? Whose country? Your or mine? Jobs? Your job or my job? And this is how at that time the entire atmosphere was becoming very cloudy. So Lord Krishna, on the pretext of using this battlefield as a sort of a drama, he revealed this knowledge. Sarva dharman parityajya. All those things which have taken the connotation dharma, give it up. And you say, and do what? Surrender unto me. Mam ekam sharanam braja. You may say, but if I satisfy you, you'll be satisfied. But in normal sense, I see that if I don't satisfy him, he is angry with me. I may get some reaction. Krishna says, aham tvam sarva pape bhyo moksha ishyami. I will give you protection from anyone else who will try to harm you. Do not fear. If you can get a person like that, of that caliber, who can give you that guarantee, then do two things. Surrender unto me, give up everything else, surrender unto me, and I'll give you protection. Then you got the right person. So the dharma which was established after the battlefield of Kurukshetra was, after the battle was over, was the real dharma of the living entity, that is doing pure service to God. Next. Okay, I'll read one, if there is no hand up here. No, I have one here, written here. Okay, we'll take those first. Okay.
Sir, according to the Kali Yuga, according to the Vedas, we are currently living in Kali Yuga.
Yes.
So, every day we can see lots and lots of bad things happening. Lots and lots of innocent people getting killed and many people losing their family members, becoming homeless. So, what for is Krishna waiting? Why does he not come and save such people who really need his help?
Okay, your question is Kali Yuga not really worse enough that Krishna is not coming again?
What I want to say is that isn't it the height of everything bad that should happen? And is it not the saturation level at which Krishna should appear in this world?
Okay, you're asking, is this what we see? Is it not the saturation level? What more is supposed to come?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So technically speaking, Kali Yuga is given a very small slot. It's like the shortest of the plays. It's only 432,000 years. 432,000 years. And out of which, about 5,000 or so have passed. So what we are seeing is a trailer of the movie. We are just seeing some products displayed in the showroom. The godown is not yet exhibited. knowing fully well that Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. Kaler dosha nide rajan, asati hi eko mahan guna, kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sanga paramrajit. That Krishna has already come in Kali Yuga. He came just before Dwapar Yuga ended and he said, Arjun, surrender unto me. And Arjuna did. Many others followed. After some few hundred or thousand years, many started saying, well, this was for Arjun, it was a private conversation between two friends. One had some psychological problem, the other solved it. And that's it. What that has to do with my life? One American person started calling it the original psychotherapy session, which was on a battlefield. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a very, very powerful scholar in his early life, and then a God-intoxicated saint, appeared in Bengal. All these pictures on the this side of the wall are leelas of Lord Chaitanya. But Lord Chaitanya's devotees were intelligent enough to discover that this is not just some devotee of Krishna who is spreading Krishna Naam, who is spreading Krishna Katha. He is Krishna himself. Krishna himself? But the Vedas say that the Lord doesn't come in Kali Yuga. One of Lord Hari's, Vishnu's description is Triyugi. Triyugi means Satya, Treta, Dwapar. He comes in those yugas. Kali is such a bad time. It's like a particular part of a city which is overrun by the mafia. The police don't even go there. So what to speak of any complaints or whatever. So similarly, Kali Yuga is so bad that if you ask the demigods for some benediction that, you know, this person is troubling me, they say, Kali Yuga, the window is closed. No complaints taken. And we can't blame anyone because nobody invited us to come in Kali Yuga. We have come here by our own karma. Why are we in Kali Yuga? Just because we have come for sightseeing? No. We are like the precipitate of a class. All the other studious students have already passed away. We are the LLBs. The Lord of Last Benches. So, I mean, I really didn't expect this. We shouldn't glorify ourselves for coming in Kali Yuga. But we are unfortunate, we are degraded, we are misguided. But the sadhus, they tell us, somehow there is a good chance for you. And what is that? You cannot do big meditation. You cannot do big time Agnihotra sacrifice. Let us say that next prerna, we tell all of you bring 5 kilos of pure ghee. All of you, by force. And we'll have a massive Agnihotra Yajna in front of our courtyard. You will say, why waste so much ghee? Why not make some halwa? So, that sacrifice is not practical. So for meditation, we don't have a lifespan. For sacrifice, we don't have the ingredients. For temple worship, we don't have the time, inclination, or the surroundings are not positive enough. So therefore they say, just do one thing. Raise your arms and chant loudly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And that is good enough to change the paradigm and bring back the original benefits of Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga or Dwapar Yuga. Thank you very much. So now we'll have Kirtan. I'd like to request Gaurgopal Prabhu to kindly begin the Kirtan here.
Everyone kindly be seated. At 9:05 we'll all rise to dance, but till then we can just sit till the show.